Hard to believe we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of the incredible Phoenix Lights story. In a moment, our investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us to talk about the Phoenix Lights. And then in our last hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Lynn Kitai will join us as well and talking about that and more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our investigative reporter Cheryl Jones back with us talking about tonight, the Phoenix Lights. Hard to believe 25 years already, Cheryl. Wow.
Yes, the time flies, doesn't it?
It sure does, and you had a chance to interview Dr. Lynn Kitai, who is very, very into this story.
She certainly is, George. She was a prominent physician at the time, but as you know, she gave that up and went totally into trying to find out what are the Phoenix Lights, or what were they? George, it's the 25th anniversary event. It's historic. It's coming up in a few weeks with big plans in place in Scottsdale, Arizona. And tonight, we'll delve into this mystery that made worldwide headlines and continues to perplex and fascinate people around the world, especially many who witnessed this phenomena, seen by thousands of people over four states and lasted several hours on March 13, 1997. And one of the most prominent researchers and key witnesses is my guest tonight, Dr. Lynn Kitai, author of The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone. What she discovered in her search for answers is astounding. Despite the fact that the U.S. military quickly attempted to explain away the incident as flares shot up into the sky, a military exercise of some sort, many others who saw the lights actually didn't agree with that. It was a massive V-formation, light formation flying low, and they thought it was something else, not of this world, including the late Apollo astronaut Edgar Mitchell. And from that point on, the research never ended. Tonight, Dr. Lynn shares her research and insight into this decades-old mystery and says there's much more to the story. Here now is our conversation.
Hello, Dr. Lynn, and welcome to Coast.
It is a joy to be with you, Cheryl, and your audience, and tell the rest of the Phoenix Light story, the inside story.
Tell us what's happening with the 25th year anniversary of the Phoenix Lights mass sighting coming up soon, how the Phoenix Lights event unfolded in March of 1997, and how you got involved.
Amazingly, I have become one of the key witnesses with the only 35 millimeter photographs of these UAP, unexplained aerial phenomena. And when I finally came forward after 7 years of anonymity, after thousands of people saw what I had been not only witnessing, but documenting on film for 2 years prior, starting in 1995 with a very close sighting that I always go back to, because my husband, who's also a physician, healthy skeptic like myself, actually had a very close sighting of these orbs in pyramid formation, and they cloaked right in front of us. It seemed mechanical, as if there was an intelligence behind them, which, again, I always go back to, because 2 years later, these huge balls of amber light showed up at a distance, and it was unnerving because it was such a massive span. 2 months before the mass sighting, I caught a series of lights head-on, turning into a V-shape. Was so unnerving that I found air traffic controllers the next morning at Sky Harbor International Airport, where it seemed near to, and that were very forthcoming initially, that said that it appeared over Class B restricted airspace, about 1,000 feet altitude. They rolled out every conventional aircraft, balloons, blimps, Chinese lanterns, even flares and skydivers with lights. They had no idea what these were. And this was really important because there were also pilots that also saw this over Class B restricted airspace. And one of them was a meteorologist. And he described them as 6 points of light, totally equidistant from each other, massive span, over a mile wide, that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what these lights were attached to or had a force field holding them in rock solid formation. And he said that actually one of these, the entire thing turned as a unit against the wind. That is another very important data, because it elevated in synchrony, as he put it, and then moved behind South Mountain. And again, this is 2 months before the mass sighting. That's exactly what thousands of people would describe 2 months later during the mass sighting as five lights in a V formation with two trailing. At any rate, I continued photographing these lights. They were so intriguing. As a scientist, I wanted to gather the most important data that I could. On March 13th, unbeknownst to me, while thousands of people were looking up at the sky purposely for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, they also caught a glimpse of mile and larger. And actually, Peter Davenport, the director of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, a couple of years ago, from all the data that he had accumulated from all these years, said that one of these objects, whether it was these orbs that seemed to be attached to something or actual craft, was over 8 miles wide, which is mind-boggling. But in reality, the mass sighting on March 13th, besides the fact that they were being seen and documented on film by other people, as well as myself, for weeks before, started at 3 p.m. on March 13th. There were actually sightings by Native Americans in New Mexico. In California, two commercial airline pilots reported that one of these massive over mile wide craft, actual craft, was covering Las Vegas. And the sightings continued until the next morning when a Boeing crewman described coming into work that morning at Sky Harbor International Airport, and his whole crew saw one of these massive craft right over their tarmac.
What did the media and government military do after the mass sighting was over?
The military knew what was going on because that night, an alleged crewman at 3 a.m. called the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, very detailed, stating that Luke Air Force Base sent out aircraft to intercept and get gun camera film of one of these massive over mile wide craft that was hovering right over Central Phoenix. And as far as the technology goes, these mile and larger objects were rooftop level, totally silent. And here we're talking about incredible technology, not only the massiveness and how the propulsion even happened. People don't know to this day how it even just glided right over people's heads about 30 miles an hour, totally silent. Some took off at blink speed without even dispersing the air. Just incredible technology, to be sure. One of the craft actually split in two and then shot straight up. So, I mean, we're talking about technology that we have not seen in 25 years. And yet, after the mass sighting, there was no investigation, no explanation, until months later in May, the former Councilwoman Vice Mayor of Phoenix, Frances Barwood, asked innocently, because she had so many constituents getting in touch saying, why isn't there an investigation? She asked for one and was just plastered to the wall. I have to tell you, Cheryl, there was so much snickering and laughing and ridicule and discrediting of some of the experts that were trying to figure this out.
Most media just picked up on a couple of hours when people were outside looking up at the sky for a glimpse of the comet. But you were a key witness. You had the only 35 millimeter photographs of these mysterious aerial phenomena before and after. Plus, you studied this data meticulously for over 25 years. And now you say at this point, there is so much more to the story.
As the story unfolded, it's very interesting because, again, there was no investigation that we knew of, no explanation. And then suddenly, on June 18th, front page USA Today article opened our sighting for the first time up to international scrutiny. Before then, it was just a conversation and a buzz in Arizona. Now, and it was amazing because we didn't have social media since 97. It went viral overnight. And reporters from all over the world were speaking with the witnesses, and their descriptions were so detailed and so heartfelt. But they would be asking, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? But as far as the mass sighting, the big over every newspaper, Phoenix lights were flares. And by the way, that's the only explanation they ever came up with. They never, ever addressed the craft that thousands of people saw right over their heads, rooftop level. To this day, the Phoenix lights have never been recreated or explained, and yet they're appearing worldwide. But it's interesting how the story unfolded itself, because right after the 10th anniversary, we find out that, and bravely so, our former governor, who had mocked the sighting in 97, came forward and disclosed that he actually witnessed one of these craft. And as an awarded military pilot, not only did he debunk the whole flare theory, but also he said that what he saw was otherworldly. And then Nimitz pilots also coming forward around that time, the private pilot that had been mentioned to me by the air traffic controllers the morning after the mass sighting also came forward. And that pilot was actor Kurt Russell, which blew me away. He was actually reporting the sighting that I was filming at the same time on March 13th, 1997, during the mass sighting.
Dr. Lynn, how would you compare the way the media handled it then in 1997 and how you think it would likely be handled today by the media if a similar event should occur, given that the government now admits to and it releases Navy videos of unexplained craft and more?
I mean, the media at the time, for the most part, except for a couple of people that actually saw one of the craft and want to get to the bottom of it as well, were very cruel. Anybody that came forward really did not have an open media forum to share. And that has only transformed recently, actually, to the last few years, that the military and government have finally come forward to say that they are studying them, that some things in our airspace that we cannot explain, not only in our airspace, but also diving into our oceans. I always say, we don't know what these are, but we know that they are. And it's time we get this topic out in the open and address it, accept it, and study it so we can find out not only who's driving these things, but also move forward in our own evolution.
There were a whole lot of various theories that floated around, including holograms, mass psychosis, and so on. How did you respond to all of that? You were right in the middle of it. And as you said, you stayed silent for 7 years, but you had a lot to handle.
It was very frustrating, actually, especially when they came out with the flare theory, because the military, as I mentioned earlier, knew what was going on. They even sent out jets to intercept the thing, and it disappeared right in front of them. As far as the different other things, holograms, I mean, we're talking multiple things happening at the same time. These orb arrays in rock-solid equidistant formations, a mile to 8 miles wide, as well as actual craft and multiple craft and in different multiple location. So somebody had to be very talented to be able to do holograms, I have to tell you. Anything that has come up has actually been debunked.
You told me you felt there was an interactive intelligence involved with the lights. And UFO photo analyst was quoted in your book saying, they know you're taking photos of them. It sure got the attention of the late, great Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. He took a great interest in this mass sighting event, and he speaks strongly throughout your documentary, saying he followed the sightings all the way through and had no doubts that we were visited. Did he ever share with you what he felt was the strongest evidence out of this, that we had been visited by extraterrestrials?
I had no idea until we sat down to do the interview that he was actually following the Phoenix Lights story closely. And then when he learned of all the other incidences that I had photographed and witnessed, it definitely was not of this world. He really felt that we were definitely being visited. And I have to tune back to the Native cultures here as well, because 6 months before the mass sighting, I was invited to the Gila Bend Indian Reservation, which is in between South Mountain, which is just south of the airport, and a few miles back is the Estrella Mountain Range, and they're in the basin in between. These anomalous aerial phenomena keep popping up in that area. They were looking up at them on March 13th during the mass sighting. They call them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. They invite them in. The Hopi right here in Arizona have protocols to invite these phenomena in. They believe that there are other intelligences out there, as did Dr. Edgar Mitchell, that are with us in other dimensions and so forth. And they even said that that's how the Estrella Mountains got its name. It means star in Spanish, gateway to the stars. And they also believe that there is a gateway or portal in that area. And again, science, we look for repeatability, and these phenomena keep popping up, and consistently they pop up in that area, very sacred ground, and they do believe in other intelligences and welcome them.
And George, that's quite a statement that
sure
Dr. Mitchell has made about the Phoenix Lights, that he believed that we had been visited during that event.
I remember Fife Symington, the governor of Arizona at the time, kind of ridiculed everything. Then he backtracked and became very serious about all this.
Yes, he did. He held a public press conference flanked by someone wearing a green space alien's costume, and he made a joke of the entire event. But later on, he did admit that his initial stance was incorrect. And as a witness of the unexplained phenomena, he followed the science and the data, and then said that he was becoming a strong voice in the search for answers to explain the Phoenix Lights.
I remember he was on Larry King Live, and I had to feed Larry his name because he kept forgetting it. And it was an
That was quite a shock when he did the turnaround and he backed off of that joke, and he claimed that he just wanted to lighten it up and he didn't want people to panic, but a lot of people didn't take it that way.
It's hard to believe it's 25 years, though. Where did the time go?
I think we've been time traveling. I think all of us have.
Crazy times. What's part two? You've got Lynn Kitai coming back.
Yes, in my next segment, Dr. Lynn says there is so much more to the story that she wants to explain to people. She believes people needs to know that there may be a connection that she's uncovered in her 25 years of research between the Phoenix Lights and other paranormal happenings, such as near-death experiences, out-of-body connections, and other UFO contact experiences. And that's some exciting research that she is currently working on, and she'll be sharing some fascinating information about that will astound you.
She's going to join us during Open Line, Cheryl, so that's going to be interesting next hour.
She will, and she'll tell more about that, and I'll tell more about that in the next segment.
Now, in 2008, there was another sighting, a different sighting. This, for the Phoenix Lights originally, was 1997. So 2008, 11 years later, there was another sighting, but they keep saying that they were flares.
They keep saying that, and she has a really good story that maybe we can get into on the phone calls about a conversation she had with the spokesperson from the Air National Guard relating to the flare theory. And also she did have an interesting response that John Greenwald of the Black Vault, the go-to guy for FOIA information, had, where they denied any involvement at all. So there were a lot of conflicting stories going on there.
What do you think of the story overall?
Fascinating. Who am I to say what it is? There are pros and cons with every theory, and every one of them all the way down has people on both sides of the issue, which makes it so fascinating to even follow the story all along. And Dr. Lynn, as you know, was a prominent physician in the Phoenix area when this event happened, and happened to be on the balcony with her husband and photographed the whole event with video as well. And she remained anonymous for 7 years, but her videos and photographs were used worldwide in news reports. Eventually, after 7 years, she came out and just switched her focus and began her new journey to uncover the answer to what are the Phoenix Lights.
Maybe Fife Symington will call in. He's still out there somewhere, huh? You never know.
Maybe he'll call in. He's a big fan.
That's what I hear. So what have you been up to lately?
Well, I've been working on this story for a while. Working on a lot of things. I'm working on several other stories yet to be released, but we have some exciting stories coming up in the months to come that I think our listeners will enjoy.
Can you believe we're going into March already?
It's unbelievable. Really, really. We've got to slow down the time.
I mean, we're going to do a time flip on, I think, March 13th. It's the beginning of daylight saving time.
Yes. Now, however, the anniversary that will take place in Scottsdale, Arizona, is not until the 20th, and we'll talk more about that at the end of the next segment as well. And she can fill in some details on that. There are going to be some exciting people there.
All right, part two of Cheryl's interview with Dr. Lynn Kitai just ahead on Coast to Coast AM. And then in our last hour, Cheryl, Dr. Lynn Kitai, and myself will all join in for open line calls with you. Next hour, we'll take your calls with Dr. Lynn Kitai and Cheryl Jones about the Phoenix Lights and other issues in a more of an open-line format, so make sure you're part of the program. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. The Phoenix Lights, a series of widely sighted unidentified flying objects, or UFOs, observed in the skies over the U.S. states of Arizona, Nevada, and also parts of Mexico on March 13, 1997. Cheryl Jones back with us for part two with her interview with Dr. Lynn Kitai, a key witness to those lights. Go ahead, Cheryl.
George, there is so much more to the Phoenix Lights story, and Dr. Lynn Kataj has been researching it now for 25 years as a key witness, as a person who photographed the event. And those photographs and her videos were used in news reports around the world. And she says so much more to the story is so important, and says that people need to know about it. What happened then and what has happened since has come to light through her research, including discoveries that the mystical Arizona aerial light and near-death, out-of-body, and other supernatural occurrences are possibly connected. So this is really, really a groundbreaking endeavor. So 25 years later, it continues to confound even the most brilliant researchers, even though they followed the science and followed the data. More and more people continue to come forward, and there's definitely something unexplainable going on. So whatever it was that people saw firsthand that night, it created a feeling that through Lynn's work, Dr. Lynn's work, she says, they couldn't explain beyond the flying lights. And our audience tonight will learn about her groundbreaking information. As we continue my interview with Dr. Lynn, the question comes to light. Could it be that we're connecting with other intelligences as part of our human evolution? Listen now to our conversation.
Dr. Lynn, I want to ask you, what is up and what's the connection between the Phoenix Lights, near-death experiences, and up?
While I was interviewing people, witnesses to the Phoenix Lights, not only did I find out that in real time, which we're so inundated with threat, and harm, with Hollywood and the media, that how are people supposed to react when they see something so unusual? And the movie Independence Day was very popular 6 months before the mass sighting. And children, interestingly, were usually the first to see this mile wide or larger V of lights coming towards them, jumping up and down, Independence Day. But as it got closer, a calmness came over everyone, adults and children alike, that after it passed, they felt connected to it. They wanted to run after it, get in their car and chase it. It's amazing, in real time. And people were just in awe. They were in wonder. I have more people that tell me till today that they feel blessed to have had that experience. That doesn't happen with planes and helicopters and flares. Well, long term, which was also interesting, people went into the peace movement, the environmental movement. It really touched people at a very, very deep soul level. In fact, other people were telling me that they had had near-death experiences as children that was reawakened by the Phoenix Lights mass sighting. And that really took me aback, because I did too. And I lay it all out there in the book. Since I was 8 years old, I have felt that we are not alone. There is so much more out there when people have. And what I found was that I thought, well, wait a minute, this isn't about me. This is about the data. And I thought, whoa, near-death experience, could that possibly be connected in some way? And again, when I started looking, just like with the UFO phenomenon, there's a plethora of credible material out there. I started finding studies at university level, Dr. Kenneth Ring, the Omega Project, which is like a 3-inch thick book, as well as Dr. Stuart Tremblow and Dr. Bruce Grayson from Near-Death Experience Study, as well as Dr. John Mack. He was fascinated with the fact that I actually found a connection between all unexplained phenomena, the experience itself. And he was telling me he was writing a book just about that, and we were going to be working together. And unfortunately, he passed 6 months later in a tragic car accident. But we discussed for some time how the experience itself, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body experience, or unexplained aerial phenomena with a mystical light associated with experience, and I lay out very simply in the book, is so similar when you really look at the data. But the most profound, poignant, powerful thing about unexplained phenomena, and I started calling all unexplained phenomena an up, UP, unexplained phenomena, and up, because the positive after effect is so life-changing. The connectedness to the universe, to the earth, to each other, that has probably never been felt by that experiencer of an up experience before. The awakening, the enlightenment, that the person is never the same. People say, do you believe in UFOs? It's not a belief anymore. It's a knowing. And also in the book, I give tips how to not only connect to these other intelligences, but if you open up your mind and your heart and you learn about and up and you learn about the data, that's fascinating, if nothing else, and powerful, it can also transform you to a positive place.
In your book, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, you show a ghost-like photo that you believe is very significant to this concept.
Thank you for bringing that up, because after doing such a study for years concerning the connection between all unexplained phenomena, it just so happened that our son had taken a picture of a kitten that he had just gotten. Here, he was very, very close to my mom, and he actually got his first pet as a gift for his then fiance on the 10th anniversary day of her passing. And he calls me up all frantic, "Mom, you're not going to believe this." And by the way, he was the biggest skeptic of the family. He calls me up. He says, "Mom, you're not going to believe this." I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I got this iZone, this very small Polaroid camera at the airport. When I got home to the apartment, I was all alone. I took the whole roll, and you must pull out a strip before you can take another picture so it can't be double exposed." He said, "I laid out all the strips, and right in the middle of the roll, there's an arm in front of the kitten's face, and it's translucent, and it looks like mom's arm." Let me explain. She had crippling juvenile arthritis. She went through nursing school, RN, in a wheelchair, and became head nurse of the premature nursery at Albert Einstein Hospital in Philadelphia. She could move mountains. She was incredible. I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for her. But I was skeptical. I said, "You got your hand in the picture, Mom. It's a right hand, and it looks like mom's hand." She had a very, very distinctive arthritic hand. I said, "You know what? Keep the picture until I get there in May when you graduate from law school." He brings out this picture. I almost fell off my chair. And we've enlarged it. I've had optical experts, as I've had for my other 35 millimeter photographs and video from university and military, take a look at it. It is mind-boggling. Not only is there an arm in front of the kitten's face, but there's another arm cupping the kitten from behind. You can see through the arm his JanSport backpack on the floor. And from all my research and from my own near-death experience, where I did see some beings above the earth in glowing white robes, the being in the picture is wearing a white robe. And when I, as a healthy skeptic, look for pictures that might have been my mom's hand, I found a picture of her, and I include that in the book, of her holding a preemie baby almost the same way, which is mind-boggling. That did it for me, Cheryl, because not only did it bring everything together that we do go on, that it is connected in some way to our afterlife, that the Phoenix Lights woke people up to that, woke people up to that we're not alone in this universe. When you have an up experience, you realize that this is real. As I said before, it's not a belief, it's a knowing.
What do you think now, Dr. Lynn, that the ultimate message of the Phoenix Lights mass sighting was and is now, after 25 years of researching and reflecting on what a life-changing mass sighting that was for so many people?
It's still an incredible mystery. We can conjecture what it might be, but we haven't seen this technology for 25 years. You would think, especially if the United States had this technology, that we would have shown the rest of the world by now. When I came forward in 2004, the accepted, okay, and the only explanation was that it was flares. And it's not just me. So many other people have lent their voice, and so many credible people, the governor, as well as Kurt Russell and others, have come forward. That lend that much more credibility. The more credible people that come forward, the more credible the sighting becomes. And 25 years later, we know at this point, something really extraordinary happened here on March 13th, 1997. But we also know that there is so much more to this story. It wasn't just a one-shot deal that a lot of people out there try to make it to be. It is not only much more to the story in Arizona, but much more to the story worldwide. This is happening worldwide. And people worldwide now, 25 years later, will look up in the sky and either see these orbs in rock-solid formation or these triangle V-shaped craft and point and say, "Whoa, there's the Phoenix Lights." And that's pretty cool.
Dr. Lynn, do you believe any Phoenix Lights documents will ever be unclassified and released to the public so that we might get closer to the truth of this event?
I really hope so. I know that John Greenwald at one point asked for a FOIA report, and what he got was that the military had nothing to do with it. So that's a little telling at the time. That's why I had to come forward, Cheryl. I couldn't just stick it in a drawer, which I really thought about doing, because once I had that 750-page journal and squeezed it down to 230 pages, and now it's in its fourth print. It keep on adding chapters as the story unfolds. And I hope the next step is that we do get more information about the Phoenix Lights, and that more people will actually look at the data. And the message for the Phoenix Lights is that they touched one person at a time with their appearance in a very gentle, non-threatening way. Again, no one was threatened. No one was harmed. No one was frightened. Quite the opposite. And to wake people up, which they did, and I've been told many, many, many times that it woke that person up, not only to the fact that we're not alone in this universe, but that we also are positive beings that have so much potential to make this world a better world. We have so much more out there in the wondrous universe to discover and embrace. And I hope today some of the people listening will do that with the Phoenix Lights.
Dr. Lynn, what's coming up next for you?
Actually, we're celebrating the 25th anniversary on March the 20th, the week after the mass sighting date of the 13th, with an annual community event that I host every year since the documentary, our award-winning documentary, came out in 2005. It's been sold out every year at the Scottsdale Hark and Shea Theater. And people can look on the website for the link for if they'd like to join us, because it's an amazing, amazing event. Not only do we show our documentary on the big screen, which is really thrilling, but it's also the only mainstream event. People in the audience either are curious or witness the Phoenix Lights and want to learn more. We have speakers, wonderful speakers from Navajo Rangers, law enforcement who are studying this, to Travis Walton joins us every year, to we have Frances Barwood, the councilwoman, and a host of others, as well as a Q&A, which this year, Alice Cooper, our own resident rock star here in Arizona, had a similar sighting to the Phoenix Lights. And he's going to be joining us by giving some answers to some questions that the audience has given him. So we're really, really excited. Again, that's on March the 20th. You can get your tickets online on the Phoenix Lights Network website or on the Phoenix Lights Network Facebook page. There's a lot to explore and consider on the website as well. They can check out the photo page, www.thephoenixlights.net. And you'll see my unique collection of 35 millimeter. They're in the negative. They cannot be explained or denied by military or university optical experts. So I hope people go there. And there's links to the book, The Phoenix Lights, The Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, as well as the documentary, The Phoenix Lights Beyond Top Secret. And they're all the latest versions.
I don't think anyone could say you're not working hard enough to search for the answers in all of these unexplained mysteries. Thank you so much, Dr. Lynn Cattai, for joining us here tonight on Coast.
Well, it was wonderful visiting with you, Cheryl, and your audience. And I just ask you all to keep looking up.
And George, it's so fascinating. This project she's working on called UP, Unexplained Phenomenon, is a continuing research project where she's making these connections in her research between events like the Phoenix Lights or UFO contact experiences and other experiences like near-death experiences, out-of-body, and so on. So she is still looking for people who have these sort of similarities that they have experienced, especially the witnesses of the Phoenix Lights. And another fascinating aspect that she may have a chance to talk about when we talk to her on the phone is her first photographic documentation of missing time as an effect from this experience.
This changed her life, didn't it?
It sure did. She was a very prominent physician in Phoenix, as many people know, and stayed anonymous for 7 years after allowing her photographs and her videos to be used in news reports around the world. And eventually it just became such a passion to her to get to the bottom of this as she started uncovering these similarities, which is quite amazing, between experiencing the close encounter that she had in 95 to the Phoenix Lights experience in 97 and then what experts in the field have documented as well. And it was really fascinating that she was going to team up with Dr. John Mack, and unfortunately that wasn't to be. But, you know, the timelessness, the missing time, and a feeling of the intelligence presence and the telepathic communication are also points of connections that she makes in this continuing research.
Cheryl, I believe back in 1997, police officers in Millstadt, Illinois, across the river from St. Louis, witnessed the same thing later on because they saw a huge triangular-shaped object just cruising through the sky.
She says that these kinds of events, and the Native Americans also substantiated that, George, saying that this was no surprise to them, that they had been communicating with these beings, as they call them, through the centuries. So it's not like that was the only time this event has happened, according to what Lynn says and researchers who've delved into it.
All right. Well, we're going to get Dr. Lynn Kitai on. Cheryl, you and I will chat with her for a little bit. Then we'll open up the phone lines and let everybody have an opportunity to talk to you, Dr. Lynn Kitai, or me in an open line format. So whatever goes, goes. When we come back on Coast to Coast AM, Cheryl's website is linked up with her name, CherylJones.com at CoastToCoastAM.com.